Now again the 1-2, and it's right back up the middle into center field, a base hit. Up and rounding third, he'll come home to score, and Miguel Cabrera gets it done with two outs. Here's a drive in the air toward left field. That ball going to the track, to the wall, and it is gone. Dixon Machado has homered a two-run shot.
He might just get the silent treatment in the dugout.
First major league home run for Machado. It'll be Aníbal Sanchez down the hill today for the Tigers. Swing and a miss. He was bailing out there, struck him out. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Sanchez limits the damage with his eighth strikeout.
I thought he was outstanding with his mix of pitches and his command of his pitches. He was real good in San Diego as well. And this is three excellent ones in a row. He's been impressive since he decided to go down and reset and become a starter again.
Ramirez shoots one high and deep to right. Renfro is out of room. It's out of here. Jose Ramirez with a two-out, two-run homer makes it 3-0 Cleveland. He drives this one to right center field, and it is gone. Nice catch by the fan with a glove right up against the bullpen fence. Home run number 18 for Edwin. Yan Gomes drills this ball to deep center field. Margo back, picking up. He'll wave goodbye.
Probably still got a big part of what's going on here on a daily basis. I bet he's not too happy in the hospital. We keep in contact with him, the guys on the team. We'll text him and talk to him and just kind of keep him in the loop, talk to him. You know, we need him at the helm here, there's no doubt about it. He's a big part of our success. He knows the game and he knows the players really well. And his presence alone has that sense of calm in the dugout. And we obviously want his health to be fine first before he comes back.
Boston, since they got the commitment from Gordon Hayward, they've had to create some salary cap space to sign him to a max deal. In doing that, they were out shopping Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, and Jay Crowder. They closed in here in the last several hours on a deal with the Pistons, which Boston sends out Bradley and a second-round pick for Marcus Morris. For the Celtics, it gives them the ability now to sign Hayward into their salary cap space, and Detroit gets a tremendous two-way player in Avery Bradley, who just, I think, going forward was going to be difficult for the Celtics to pay him his market value, which could be as much as $20 million a year. Stan Van Gundy has been looking for that tough-minded two-way player at the guard position. He can score the ball. He defends. He's an elite defender at his position. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who's a restricted free agent, he could potentially go out and get a max offer sheet from a team like Otto Porter did. Detroit has been very reluctant to pay him that kind of money, and it gives Detroit now the flexibility to maybe not have to keep Caldwell-Pope, but now they have an alternative here if they don't go forward with him. You know, Avery Bradley's a player who I think the Pistons are going to be very aggressive in trying to extend long-term.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to this Friday afternoon edition of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are. Toledo's sports leader. Hope you are having a simply outstanding day. How about the move by the Detroit Pistons? One day after I complained they're probably one of the three or four most inactive teams in free agency and trading, they go out there and they get busy in a trade. Congratulations to the Pistons for recognizing if you stand still, you will stand flat, and you will continue to be outside of the playoff race looking on or looking in this upcoming Eastern Conference season. And so they made some moves. The question now is whether the move makes them a whole heck of a lot better. Avery Bradley, better player than Kentavious Caldwell-Pope? Probably. Probably. Gives them a little bit more on both ends of the floor. But really, is it, you know, is it enough? Let's just say this. They got active. They added a very big piece. In my estimation, I think they helped weaken a little bit. They weakened the Boston Celtics because I think it is a good trade from the Pistons standpoint. And that is a great thing for me considering the Celtics are about the only thing even close to something resembling a threat against my Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA's Eastern Conference next season. So we're going to get some reaction, including yours. What do you think if you're a Detroit Pistons fan of your move from Marcus Morris, the three, going to Boston for the two, Avery Bradley, to replace Ken, and then, of course, rescinding the offer to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, making him an unrestricted free agent, and knowing clearly and certainly that he is going to be moving on. How do you feel about it if you are a Pistons fan. We'll talk to you at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. So that's top of the mind as we get our program started today, and we'll get your thoughts on it. We'll get Cushland's thoughts on it and much, much more coming up. But other big top of the mind news, how about it? Justin Upton makes his way onto the American League's All-Star team, thanks to, of course, injuries, creating some positions open for guys to get into the All-Star game, or at least get onto the All-Star roster. Mike Trout being injured, of course, is among them. Several pitchers have been added today as well. So Justin Upton makes two Detroit Tigers now that will be a part of All-Star weekend and the All-Star game on Tuesday night. So congratulations to him for what it's worth. Michael Fulmer will not participate in that game. That's why he is one of the players who will be introduced but not participate, and there will be a replacement, or has been, a replacement named for him. Corey Kluber of the Indians, same situation. He will not participate in the game Sunday, and the reason why, or Tuesday, I should say, and the reason why is because both he and Fulmer will be facing off against one another in a battle of all-star starters on Sunday. Guess what else? The best pitcher in the National League, Clayton Kershaw of the Dodgers, is also scheduled to pitch on Sunday, and he is going to make his regular turn in the rotation. As Dave Roberts, the manager of the high-flying Dodgers, says, Clayton's going to pitch when it's his time to pitch. It's that simple. He doesn't have to be in the All-Star game. So some of the best pitchers in baseball are going to be missing from the All-Star game, in essence making it kind of, you know, the manager's taking the stars out of all stars. Well, at least when it comes to the pitchers. And that is a problem that a lot of people seem to be upset about. They're expressing some frustration that we won't get to see Clayton Kershaw take the mound in the first two innings against the very top six hitters that the American League has to offer. And that perhaps Corey Kluber, maybe the best starter in the American League, won't be able to face the very best hitters the National League has to offer, which is what the All-Star game used to be about, used to be very exciting about. Now the managers are saying, we don't care. We don't care about that exhibition game, even if it is more than an exhibition game, considering the fact that last year the American League won that exhibition game, giving the Cleveland Indians home field advantage in the World Series against the Chicago Cubs, despite the Cubs having the superior record, the very best record in all of baseball. So Major League Baseball continues to flummox many, including yours truly, with their rules. And the game matters, the game doesn't matter. If the game matters, how come the best players aren't playing in it? And all of the rest. So we're going to try to get into all of that today on the extravaganza on this free-for-all Friday as well. Some NFL news as well. Not really news as much as statements being made by a free agent running back that really had a great, great debate going this morning on Mike and Mike. I would like to have a conversation with you about that here this afternoon, so that, because they don't take calls on Mike and Mike. We do, and I want to hear what you have to say about the issue of marijuana in the National Football League. D'Angelo Williams, former Steeler, now a free agent running back, is really, really upset that the NFL is not doing enough to help protect their players when they get suspended for marijuana use. It was a really, really great conversation. I would like to have a conversation about that with you today. So those are just some of the things going on, and obviously there's a pretty doggone good baseball series. Well, maybe not good, pretty big baseball series between the first-place Cleveland Indians and the fourth-place Detroit Tigers. Anytime the Indians and Tigers get set for a weekend series, we love it. And it's going to be a very good one. Pitching matchups, I think, are very interesting. So we'll break that down a little bit as we go today as well. Looking at it right now, it's Carlos Carrasco tonight against Jordan Zimmermann. That'll be the first one. And again, I'm really looking forward to the entire series. Zimmer and Carrasco today, Verlander and Clevinger, who has been lights out. How about that? If I'd have told you that in the matchup on Saturday of Justin Verlander versus Mike Clevinger, one of these major league starters has an ERA of 3.32, the other one has an ERA of 4.98, which one would you assign to which pitcher? You'd be wrong, because it's Clevinger who has been terrific for the Indians, and Verlander who has been brutal against, specifically, the Indians. His 5-5 record, his 4.9 ERA, 9.8 ERA, almost all the responsibility of the Indians, who have hit him to the tune of an 11-plus ERA in the matchups they have had this season alone. against the rest of baseball, Verlander is much closer to 3 than he is to 5. And then, of course, the All-Star matchup, as I mentioned, it is going to be Michael Fulmer on Sunday, 8-6 with a 3-2-0 against Corey Kluber, 7-3 with a 2.85. That is going to be a fun one. Jim Cushlin, our producer extraordinaire and sometime co-host and sometime fill-in host of this program. Busy, busy day-to-day, Cush.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the lead story, which is the trade involving the Pistons, in which they acquire Avery Bradley and a pick for Marcus Morris, and they, at the same time, essentially withdraw the qualifying offer to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, saying, we feel we've upgraded the position of two-guard. How much of an upgrade do you think it is with Bradley over Caldwell-Pope, considering how much it was going to probably cost for Caldwell-Pope?
Well, I think some of the cost is probably the biggest thing in here because, you know, there were talks of maybe the Nets or somebody offering him a big near-max type of offer sheet. There's been the question mark over the head this whole time. Would the Pistons want to even match that? They'd have apron issues. That's one of those salary cap and luxury tax terms because, as we mentioned, they're, especially with the two official signings of Langston Galloway and backup big man Eric Moreland that have went down already, that puts their number over the $99 million cap already. You have to bring back KCP because there's a max offer sheet out there. Now you're into the luxury tax stuff, and given the Pistons and where they're at, you don't necessarily want to be in that. So from that position, I think money is the first thing. But generally, I think that right now Avery Bradley is the better player. We've been waiting for a long time for KCP to really become the more offensive player that some have thought he was capable of being. It really hasn't panned out the way I thought he had turned a corner, honestly, in the playoff year 2 years ago as their two guard. And you bring back a guy in Avery Bradley who could play both ends. Good offensively, had a career year this year after averaging 16 points, a good defender. I would say the only problem with Bradley in tow, and you're going to obviously hear grumblings about this when we have Pistons talk for a little bit while now, is can they convince Avery Bradley to re-sign some kind of extension? Because this is the final year of Avery Bradley's deal, whereas, for example, you know, KCP could have been here a bunch of years, depending on what the offer was, and the guy they traded away, Marcus Morris, he is signed through 18-19, so he has 2 years left on the deal. So if you can't work out any kind of extension with Bradley, then he's going to end up walking possibly next year, but not having a max KCP and another year of Marcus Morris after this year, for example, it'll help them in possible cap situations as they go forward. Because as we've discussed and did again yesterday, this is a team that, considering where they are in the pecking order, you can't be in the tax. You just got to do everything you can.
No, this team should not be in the tax, that's for sure.
Right, exactly. It's one thing, Bob, when you and I were talking about the Cavs and how bad into the tax they are. Well, they have a little bit of a different outlook, which is a still probable return trip to the NBA Finals. That is not in the Pistons' future at all. So you have to do what you can to avoid getting into tax situations because they're going to be over the cap either way this year. And obviously for Boston, they had to do this because they needed to clear some space to get Gordon Hayward in there. I mean, Kelly Olynyk's now off of Boston. He signed a deal somewhere else, so that's Bradley.
Miami. He goes to Miami.
Thank you. It was Miami, so he's already gone.
On a $50 million deal, by the way. That stiff doesn't deserve $50, let alone $50 million. I mean, that's almost as bad as Mozgov getting 64 from the Lakers last year, which, of course, has now been passed on to the Nets. But,
yeah.
But, I mean, honestly, let's go back to Avery Bradley.
Yeah.
One of the better two-way two guards in the league. There are not a lot of great two guards in the league, no question about it. Best year of his career, seven-year career, with 16-plus points per game this past season and almost 40% from beyond the arc, which, of course, is such a premium now in today's three-point-heavy NBA ideology, if you will, right? So it is a big deal to get a player like that if you can get him long-term. Now, the Free Press, the Detroit Free Press, Jim, Vince Ellis actually quoting somebody, quote, close to the Pistons or close to the situation. He says he has firsthand knowledge.
Okay.
Told the Free Press that This particular deal is not going to end up being a great one for the Pistons because it only will be a one-year deal. Bradley is currently available for a contract extension, but that's unlikely, although the Pistons are interested in a long-term engagement. Quoting Vince Ellis at the Free Press now, who is quoting his source inside the Pistons. Quote, he won't extend, meaning Bradley. The money is too low. We hope it's long-term, but even if he leaves, we'll have had a year to see Luke Kennard and we'll maintain financial flexibility, end quote. So they're looking at it as though even if we only have him for a year, it's a good player for the year, maybe even gets us into the playoffs, perhaps. While we bring Kennard along slowly, don't expect him to start at the two guard. Obviously, they don't want to pay Kentavious Caldwell-Pope what it was going to take to keep him there. So this gives them a guy who is a better player, and even if he walks, that frees up that money next year, so they'll have financial flexibility and a second-year two guard who is a sweet shooter himself. And, of course, the rookie first-round pick, Luke Kennard. So that's the Free Press quoting a source saying this is only going to be a one-year deal.
Yeah, and that kind of sounds like, you know, what I was just more or less trying to say, that he might end up walking if they can't get an extension. I mean, you're reading that.
Yeah, they're saying this source is saying it's not a matter of if, it's how it's going to be. It's
right.
Going to be a one-year thing. They're saying this is he's not going to re-sign long-term with the Pistons.
But it helps also because now that these changes were made, even if Bradley walks after next year from Detroit to elsewhere, then you get at least a season in of Luke Kennard. Langston Galloway, one of their two other free agent signings, he'll be, regardless of what his contract situation is, he'll be off the bench in that backup role. In a twisted way, the one thing this does open to question is what the Pistons are going to do with the three spot, the small forward, because right now the only guys left on the roster for that are Stanley Johnson, who's been somewhat of a disappointment, Reggie Bullock,
who's a huge disappointment.
Yeah, Reggie Bullock, and no offense to Reggie, but he's a bench player, period. It almost makes me wonder if they're going to try to have lineups at times where they have both John Luer and Tobias Harris starting, one at the three and one at the four. Because of Marcus Morris, they weren't able to do that last year. It started Harris, became John Luer. But I almost wonder if that's an option they might do because
it's possible. I was also wondering, Jim, about Kennard, if he could play any three. Or is he exclusively a shooting guard? Because he's not thick in terms of big, but he's tall enough probably to play the three and maybe match up against some guys, but he could get muscled around against other guys.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't have to be on a nightly basis, but I just wonder if sometimes they don't play Avery Bradley at the two and Luke Kennard get a lot of minutes at the three, so they're on the court at the same time. And again, stretching defense is the way. I mean, look, like everything else, it's a copycat league, and the Warriors are the champs, and they've been there twice, won it twice in the last 3 years, having been there all three times, and they do it as a three-point shooting team.
Yeah.
Everybody is looking for shooters, and the more you have on the floor, according to the Warriors' ideology that everybody wants to copy, and including the Cavs, who have tried to copy it. They just gave $22 million to Kyle Korver to stay around and shoot threes, J.R. Smith to shoot threes. This is the way Channing Frye even as a big guy off the bench. This is what they do and everybody does. So it wouldn't surprise me if Stan Van Gundy ends up using Avery Bradley and Luke Kennard on the court at the same time. Maybe slide Kennard over to the what would be considered the three in a traditional type of set, but which in reality in today's NBA with the spacing the way it is, it almost can be whatever you want to call
it. And that option,
a wing player is what you would call it.
Right, and that option could be something that takes hold. Of course, because that involves Luke Kennard, I see that as an evolutionary process. That's kind of the thing I wouldn't expect in November, December, per se. But maybe as the season goes along, they tinker with something like that. I certainly wouldn't expect them to come out with something like that, at the beginning of the year. And again, because of their cap situation, don't expect them to be able to sign somebody similar to a Marcus Morris out there because they just won't have the room. That's why it would have to come from internally with what they have. And that's why, as I said, one of my hunches is maybe you're looking at Tobias Harris and John Luer both starting, one at the three and one at the four, in terms of traditional positional lineups. That's one possibility because Stanley Johnson won't get the starts. Reggie Bullock will. Langston Galloway, he's more of a two, maybe three, but he's also more of a bench guy in that situation. So that would be where I think Stan Van Gundy may go with this at first, but a lot of it will be kind of wait and see. The best part, if I could think of that for the Pistons, is, as you pointed out in the Vince Ellis portion of this, when you brought up his quote from a source,
yeah,
was financial flexibility. And it absolutely does. If you're not going to be tied down to KCP on a near max deal, and we're not going to get into the you know, if that's a good or bad thing, that's not what we're trying to talk about, but if you have that financial flexibility, and then Bradley's off the books and Morris is off the books, and you need to get yourself in a better cap situation, because you're not in a position like, say, the Cavs, where it's like, okay, I guess we'll go into the tax and even repeater if it at least gets us those shots at the finals and maybe a title. Since the Pistons are not in that same arena, as it were, you got to do what you can to make sure taxpayer levels don't get involved. And if you can, get yourself to or under the cap level, because that will provide more flexibility down the line, and they're going to need it.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So big news made today by the Pistons as they do acquire Avery Bradley. To me, it weakens, to some extent, the Boston Celtics. Also losing Olynyk, even though he's a stiff. He was their big stiff, and sometimes you need guys like that to do some things. You know, they made a lot of sacrifices, as it turns out, to get Gordon Hayward. And I don't know that they're that much better, if they're better at all.
They needed the one more player. They needed something like the Paul George trade rumors to go down. Then we can have that conversation. If anything, on paper right now, okay, the East Finals is a little more competitive than the one we just saw, but that's about it.
Yeah, but is it really? And if it is, what does that mean? Instead of 25 a game, the average is 20 a game when the Cavaliers beat them in five? Because, I mean, literally, they beat them by 100 points. The average margin of victory
is 25. That's what I guess I'm saying here. They won't be just ridiculous blowouts that make you question how the Cavs even lost a game. Yeah. It'll be a five, maybe six-game series, and the games will be a little closer.
Possibly. Very, very, very possible. So so we've got that going for us. We're going to get a timeout here. That's a little bit on the NBA right out of the gate. Some pretty big moves there made by the Pistons and the Celtics.
But I love, as you point out completely correctly, we're just having a conversation with David Fernandez yesterday.
Yep.
Why are the Pistons so quiet? And then bam, just
yep, boom.
That's
and
how
and
it works,
a big
right?
deal is made. Because to me, Galloway yesterday, whatever. You know, it's a seven-point-a-game guy. I'm not, you know, it's not a move that's worth talking about. But this certainly is. All right, but we are going to stop talking about that now, because we're going to get a bottom-of-the-hour Sports Center. Then we're going to come back and talk All-Stars. And we're going to talk baseball. We're going to talk about the Tigers and the Indians at Progressive Field this weekend, the worst possible place in the world for the Cleveland Indians to be, in their own home ballpark, because they suck there and have all season long. They lost 2 out of 3, Cush, to the lowly Padres at their own building, for goodness sakes. Meanwhile, their manager had heart surgery yesterday. Terry Francona will not manage the American League in the All-Star Game Tuesday night as he recovers from that procedure dealing with his cardiac arrhythmia. So we're going to get the update on all of that from Matt Lodi from Cleveland, where the Tigers and Indians do battle tonight. We will talk about the new additions to the All-Star team, including Justin Upton, who's going to be the second Tiger who was named to the game and the only one who has a chance of playing in the game, which is something else we will riff about as well. 866-240-1065 is the number to join us, and it's also the number to call if you would like a pair of tickets, or excuse me, a four-pack of passes to the Marathon Classic. I got a four-pack of Any Day Ground passes to the Classic at Highland Meadows from July 17th to the 23rd. Be caller number 7 right now, caller 7. At that same number, 866-240-1065, and we will set you up with that four-pack of ground passes. Talking baseball with Matt Lodi out of Cleveland coming up next, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Abaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling on, we are on this free-for-all Friday edition of the Extravaganza. It's 3:38. Thanks for being with us. Got another Sports Center coming your way at the top of the hour. Congratulations to Adam McKee of Toledo. He's going to go to the Marathon Classic coming up in about a week and a half, actually, and very much looking forward to that. All right, also looking forward to this weekend series. Your Detroit Tigers take on the Cleveland Indians. A three-gamer over the weekend, final games of the first half, which, of course, means pre-All-Star game of the season. And three really, really interesting pitching matchups. We're going to talk about that, and we're also going to talk about the All-Star game itself. Joining us now is Mr. Matt Lodi, who covers the Cleveland Indians and more Cleveland sports for the Northeast Ohio Insiders, NEOinsiders.com, and also for the Associated Press on the radio side. out of Cleveland. Matt, how are you, my man?
Hey, Bob. How you doing today?
I am outstanding. Thanks very much. Matt, I got so many different issues to get to regarding baseball and regarding this particular series and why it is the Indians flat out stink on ice in their own building. But before we get into all of that, what's going on with Terry Francona? Surgery yesterday, heart arrhythmia that he's been dealing with for the last several weeks, apparently. And it hit me, you know, like a ton of bricks today when I found out he had a surgical procedure yesterday.
Well, you know, Bob, we actually kind of heard the rumblings that this happened last night. You know, it's kind of funny. You know how it is. It's like all of a sudden one person says one thing and then there's another word spoken. And then all of a sudden you're kind of sitting on this thing like, okay, we kind of figured that something happened, like a surgery. And if you read Tom Withers from the Associated Press, his piece, it even mentioned the quote possibility of a procedure. He actually used those words last night in his story about Terry Francona, which basically told you all you need to know. And then, of course, today, just like what happens with every big story, it was broken by the national media and Ken Rosenthal, who tweeted it out first, that Terry did indeed have a heart procedure yesterday. He will be out for a couple of days, but he should be fully recovered and good to go, which is the most important thing in this type of situation. You don't want him, and you know Terry Francona, if you've covered him, if you've been around him enough, you know that how this has got to just be killing him in terms of, you know, coming back and trying to be with this baseball team. And, you know, this is an important time of the year. I mean, forget about the fact that this team has not played up to its expectations, but, you know, you just lost two out of three to a Padres team that's going nowhere fast. And now you've got three games against a Detroit team that you've not played great against. You just did win two out of three against them. And it would be really good to have the guy who's running the show there, and it's just not going to happen. But I felt like the team played with a little bit of an edge last night. Certainly, it seemed that way, and I think some of that had to do with the fact that they knew their manager had just undergone something, you know, not life-threatening, but certainly something that was very important. So from all indications, this should, knock on wood, solve the issues that he's been having throughout the course of, what, three times this year that he's had to leave Progressive Field before a game or during a game because of this. And from all indications that we have heard today, this should be something that hopefully he will feel a lot better from once he gets back to action. And what we're being told is that he will be with the team when they go to Oakland next Thursday. They're going to fly out Thursday from Cleveland to Oakland. And then, of course, they play the A's, and then they go on to play the Giants, and they've been so bad in the interleague play. But he should be with them then. And then, again, knock on wood, if everything works out, he should be with them and healthy, at least we hope so, the rest of the season.
Matt Lodi joining us from Cleveland. He runs the tremendous website, NEOSportsInsiders.com, and he's also a reporter for the Associated Press out in Cleveland as well. The Indians and the Tigers do battle this weekend. Thanks for the update on Terry. Obviously, a very most important thing in the world, of course, is that man's health. He's so beloved by so
absolutely
many people all across baseball. No matter what city he goes to, everybody loves Terry Francona, and with very, very good reason. All right, before we get to the All-Star game, and I got a number of things to talk about there, let's talk about this series, and let's talk about the state of the Indians one series away from the All-Star break. They do have a half-game lead in the division. They still are probably the odds-on favorite to win the American League Central Division, defending that crown that they won a year ago, and to make it back into the playoffs again. Whether or not they are a favorite to do any damage when they get there, well, probably not so much. I take that back, by the way. They're a full game over Kansas City. Beg your pardon.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just don't look very consistent, and they certainly cannot seem to play well at home. This latest series against the Padres, the kind of thing you're looking for if you're looking for a way to get healthy, if you will, at home. One of the worst teams in baseball comes in and takes the first two games, despite a tremendous performance by Kluber, by the way, in game one. What's going on? Why is this team unable to handle their own home cooking?
Well, I wrote an article the other day about the struggles at Progressive Field, and I think that there's some statistical information to back it up, but I also think that it's more than that, Bob. I think there's more even psychological, mental type things that you can look at to back it up. I mean, and really my point's going to be made pretty quickly here, and that is two nights ago, that team put up 14 hits, the Indians, that is, and scored two runs. Last night, they put up 14 hits and scored 11 runs. I think that pretty much tells you all you need to know. This team does not, at least in this season to this point, has not come up with enough big hits with runners in scoring position at home. And the extra base hits at home are statistically down from when they're on the road. And that is just a head scratcher as to why. I mean, you just, you know, and there's no easy answer. I mean, I don't have like the, you know, the pentameter of like, okay, this is exactly what's going on. It right. just seems to me that maybe they're playing, maybe they're overconfident when they play at home. You know, I mean, let's face it, back in the mid 90s, and we're a long way away from that, this team could be down four runs in the seventh inning and win a game rather easily when the Bells and Baergas and Loftons were in town.
Sure.
You know, and this team had a lot of those, not necessarily four-run comeback wins, but they had a lot of one- and two-run comeback wins last year, and that is pretty much the same group of guys. So maybe they just feel like it's okay, we'll find a way, which they're not, because I'll tell you what, in those two games against the Padres, in those eighth and ninth innings, they were as flat as can be. They just had no energy. Maybe it's the fact, as I said, that you know, once they get runners in scoring position, they always seem to get runners in scoring position. And unfortunately, a guy like Yan Gomes, who struck out in 13 of 15 games in June, has already struck out in every game in July, comes up. Or even a guy like Edwin Encarnacion comes up and doesn't get the job done. I mean, it's almost like it's got to be more than one thing. And I think those are just a few of the reasons why. But, you know, to me, I think, you know, they've had enough team meetings. They've had enough pep talks from their manager. There is no more excuses here. And I still point back, and I've said this to many other people about this, Bob, they lack veteran leadership on this roster. And I don't mean veteran leadership in that, well, Corey Kluber's been around 5 years, Michael Brantley's in his fifth or sixth year. I'm talking gritty, Mike Napoli, get in your face, Johnny Damon, a guy of that caliber, you know, Mike Aviles from a few years ago, Ryan Rayburn. A guy that will, you know, turn off the music in the locker room and say, let's get to work. There's just not that guy in the locker room that will get them to that point. And I think they really lack that. I really do. And it's part of the reason, and somebody else in the organization confirmed this to me, that's part of the reason they wanted Chase Utley this offseason, was because he was going to be sort of this year's get-in-your-face, yell-at-you type of gritty veteran. And look at what he's doing with that young Dodgers team. And that Dodgers team, of course, they're really good anyway.
Yeah.
But to have that type of guy means a lot. And not having a guy like Mike Napoli, I think, has done them a disservice, even though they've got a guy there in Edwin who, you know, can hit the baseball a long way, as we saw last night. It's just not the same impact. And I know that that's hard to see, but it really just is.
How long does one have to be, you know, a major leaguer and a fixture in a team's lineup to be a veteran who can do that? Because I'm looking at a guy like Kipnis.
Yeah, I know.
He's a grizzled Chase Utley, but, you know, he's not a second-year guy either. He's been an all-star. He's been a part of this thing for the last 4 or 5 years. He's as much of a fixture as anyone else, including Brantley and maybe Santana, who's been there longer. And he's a regular, although when you're hitting 220 the way Santana is and just simply not getting your job done, it's kind of hard for you to bark at anybody else.
Right.
Maybe Kipnis has the same problem because he's not hitting either. So I don't know how much it is leadership out of guys like that as it is, hey, you know what, start swinging, start raking a little bit, get the average from 220 to 270, you know, both of your sorry butts, and maybe some of these games where you got 14 hits and score two runs actually don't work out that way.
Well, part of it, I do agree with you, and there's, you know, people have kind of brought that up to me, especially on Twitter. Well, you know, what about Brantley? What about Kipnis? I mean, all we heard 2 years ago when Michael Bourne and Nick Swisher were shipped out of here was, okay, this team now belongs to Kipnis, Brantley, Kluber, and Gomes. Well, you know, then they brought in Mike Napoli, and, you know, Tom Hamilton last week told me he was the unequivocal locker room leader. He was the guy that ran the show. He chose things as far as how they would do things before the game. And, you know, what that kind of does is it kind of takes away the leadership role from guys like Kipnis and Brantley and even Kluber. And, of course, Gomes had such a bad year and got hurt anyway. But, you know, it kind of almost took the onus off of those guys. Well, now a guy like, you know, a guy like Napoli's not around. You expect Kipnis and Brantley to pick up the role again. And they're just, you know, Brantley, of course, coming off the injury, even though he's had a great year and he's already an all-star. You know, Kipnis came in the year, you know, injured and has clearly not played up to his potential. It's hard to, you know, kind of do a dual role like that. And, you know, and again, I'm in that locker room a lot and I see it. I just don't see the same, I don't know, energy, I guess, if you will. And that's hard to say because I don't want to put the guys down and say, oh, they're not playing with passion. They're not playing with pride. It has nothing to do with that.
I will.
Well, you can, but I mean, I don't see that. I just see a lack of somebody to rally the troops, I guess, if you will. And
I guess that's,
what
I'll complain about. You know, I mean, okay, Napoli did it last year, so that took some of it away from guys like Kipnis. Well, guess what, Kip? Be a big boy. Put your big boy pants on. Napoli isn't here anymore. Take control of the clubhouse.
Right.
Be the guy that everybody looks to. You pick the stuff. I mean, step up and man up. Sometimes you have to learn to be a leader just like you have to learn to be a hitter. It takes countless numbers of hours in the cage, working on the one pitch that seems to give you the most trouble, turning here, slicing there, going the other way there, whatever the case might be that you have to work on. You know, sometimes you got to do the same thing when your team doesn't need a timely base hit. They need a timely kick in the pants.
They need a timely
pick-me-up or whatever it is. And the veteran guys are supposed to do that. You cannot expect the real youngsters to do that. You got to get the guys who have the pedigree, who have been all-stars. And so, you know what, Kip? Okay, so Napoli stole some of that thunder last year. He's not here. Pick it up.
Well, and, you know, a quick story on Napoli real quick before we move on. I remember last year, well, not even, it was this year, Tom Hamilton told me a story. Remember opening day last year when it was like 25, 30 degrees? It was terrible. It was really cold in the opener against Boston. And some of the players had been sort of belly aching about the fact that, you know, are we really going to play this game? It's really cold. You know, it's not a good day to play baseball. Well, here Napoli's walking around the locker room with no shirt on saying, let's go out there right now. It's not cold enough. You know what I mean? It's like, that's what I'm talking about. A guy that will lead by example. And I got to be honest, Bob, I just don't see anybody stepping up to take that role this year. And I've actually gotten into arguments with people about that because you mentioned the name Jason Kipnis. Again, Michael Brantley, Yan Gomes, Corey Kluber. You know, there's enough guys that Cody Allen. There's enough guys that have been in there long enough that somebody should be taking the reins when the team meetings are called. And I just don't know out of all the guys in there who it would be that guy.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough and well said. We're talking to Matt Lodi, who is going to be covering the Indians and the Tigers this weekend. Let's talk about the pitching matchups because I absolutely love them. Just from a competitive standpoint, I love what's coming up here. And then I want to talk a little bit about what it means to the All-Star game. First of all, tonight, Zimmerman and Carrasco. Very disappointed I am that Carrasco did not get named as an injury replacement to the All-Star American League team, or not the injury, or the unavailable replacement. To that team, but I think that's a very interesting matchup. Tomorrow, Verlander, whose ERA of 4.98 is almost all the responsibility of the Indians, who hit him to the tune of an 11 ERA. Against the rest of baseball, Verlander's ERA is about 3, which is amazing to me. And Mike Clevinger, who is also amazing, has been spectacular.
An ERA
he's been good. In 7 decisions, 4-3, of 3.32. And just nobody saw that coming out of anywhere. That was supposed to be what Danny Salazar was doing for this team. And then Sunday, that's the marquee matchup. Two all-star starters, Michael Fulmer, who's got an ERA of 3.20 and a tremendous sophomore year, and Corey Kluber, who ever since coming off of the DL has been cy-bleeping young. He's 7-3 with a 2.85 ERA Sunday. So, first of all, the Indians have to take at least two out of these three, in my opinion.
Agreed.
Going into the All-Star break, because you don't want to be going in on a losing run of two out of three to the Tigers after two out of three losses to the Padres. My question to you is, Matt Lodi, can they shake whatever it is we can't figure out is going on at home and win all three of them and really get momentum going into the break?
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, it just comes down to, you know, the momentum of, you know, hitting with runners in scoring position. You know, defensively, you know, even the other night made a couple bad mistakes in the game on Monday night, which cost them the only run of the game. I'm sorry, Tuesday night. I keep getting confused. Tuesday night, the two mishaps, you know, by Kipnis and Lindor, they cost him a run, and it cost him the biggest run. It was the only run of the game. I like the Indians in terms of, especially tomorrow and Sunday, like you said, even though, you know, Fulmer is nothing to sneeze at. He's really good. I just think the Indians, and certainly, like you said, against Verlander, they have just dominated him this year. He's just not the same pitcher, at least against the Indians, that he was years ago. So you've got to give, I think, the edge to the Indians on Sunday and even Saturday. But tonight is the interesting game because, obviously, Carrasco, he's been a little bit inconsistent, and at home he's been a little bit inconsistent, but, you know, he's been good for the most part, and you've got to assume that now that the Francona news is out there and the Indians players are going to get asked about it a lot today, that hopefully they can, you know, kind of, if it's a win one for the Gipper, I'm sure Terry will take it. Let's just put it that way, even though I think last night they kind of played with that same energy and same attitude. This would mean a lot for the Indians to go in the All-Star break with a four-game losing, a winning streak, rather, just because again, I've said all along, and I'm sure you'll agree, I think they'll methodically find a way to sort of advance themselves in this division. I don't see Minnesota, I don't see Kansas City sticking around long term, but at the same time, until they do it, there's going to be question marks, and playing at home, there's going to be question marks. I mean, you can't be a World Series contender, in my opinion, and play badly at home. It's almost impossible. I don't see how, because it's just the way baseball is played. You've got to win your games at home, and you know, they're not going to be home again until July 21st after Sunday. They get the long road trip after the All-Star break. So, you know, hey, it would be nice to get a couple more wins at home and get these crowds going. I know tonight's a sellout. I know tomorrow's very close and Sunday's very close. You know, it would be nice to get some wins in front of a big home crowd and, you know, maybe get some momentum and some energy back into what's been a pretty, I don't want to say disappointing because you're still in first place, but underwhelming or a lackluster, I guess, is the two terms I was going to use first half of this team.
Could be worse, though, because their opponent in the World Series last November, of course, was the Chicago Cubs, who are actually under 500 now as they suffer through what a lot of people are calling a World Series hangover as well. So we'll see if both those teams get it right in the second half. Matt, a couple of quickies on the All-Star game.
Yeah.
A lot of people are disappointed about this, and I am too. Clayton Kershaw is, of course, the best pitcher in the National League. He's ridiculous, and he's, in fact, one of the greatest pitchers of all time. He's in the middle of a five-year run. I heard this stat earlier this week. Maybe you know it. He's got a five-year running ERA of 1.93.
I did not hear that, but that does not surprise me.
The greatest five-year run in the history of baseball.
That is incredible.
It was remarkable. Yeah. I think it was Mike and Mike who had that last, I think it was on Wednesday. But anyway, you know, what I used to love about the All-Star game, and this is pre using it for any World Series advantage or anything else, which I still think is stupid. But what I used to love is, oh my God, in 1978, Ron Guidry, who was like 11-0 at the All-Star break with an ERA of like 0.2 or something stupid. I can't wait to see him face Mike Schmidt. You know, and the National League's best. I mean, that matchup of the very, and of course there was no interleague play then too, so it really added to the intrigue. The very best that the one league had to have, or had against the very best the other team has to offer. And I loved that. And now Dave Roberts says, yeah, well, Clay's going to pitch on Sunday. He won't be available. Well, guess
right.
What else?
Yeah, Kluber.
Terry Francona and Brad Mills are saying, Corey's turn is Sunday, so he's not going to pitch in the All-Star game. Michael Fulmer, Brad Osmus says, he's our guy on Sunday. He's not going to pitch. I want the best guys to be able to pitch in the All-Star game. I understand the managers who want to keep them in their regular turns and, hey, we're fighting for a pennant and blah, blah, blah. We don't want to mess things up. But how do you feel about so many of these guys, these pitchers, are not going to be available because so many are pitching this weekend and are thus being replaced? And, you know, the All-Star rosters are starting to balloon, for crying out loud. It starts to look like an NFL Pro Bowl roster because of all of the replacements.
Well, part of me agrees 100% that, you know, like you said, if you're going to do this thing and you're going to do it the way that baseball does it, which is in the middle of the season, you don't want it to turn into basketball, which has become a joke.
Yeah.
You know, and it's become nothing more than just slam dunks and street ball. You want it to still mean something. Now, on the other hand, you know, I do get, you know, teams don't want to lose their best players long term. You know, they don't want to lose, you know, a guy like a Kershaw, a guy like obviously a Kluber or a Fulmer. And it's very difficult when you are put in that position because, you know, what is the better thing long term for your organization? You know, so, you know, it just seemed like it was simpler back in the day. You know, fans voted in who they wanted. You know, the managers picked the pitchers and that was it. Nowadays, it's, you know, you got these ridiculous, let's name an extra player and let's put forth 3 days of voting and, you know, obviously social media. And I mean, you know, and I'm not discrediting what the Indians did with Jose Ramirez, but it just seemed like every hour on the hour we were being told we had to vote for Jose Ramirez 10 times, you know, and it's like, it just gets to be a little overwhelming. It's like, it takes away from some of the, I guess, some of the purity of it, like it was when you and I were young. And it just, you know, it's not the same game. We all know that because of, you know, the way social media is and the way that, you know, people just perceive baseball. But there is still a sense of the All-Star game meaning something, even now with, you know, the way they were doing it the last few years with the home field advantage for the World Series being out the window again, which is, I know you like it, and I have mixed feelings about it myself, but I get it. You know, when you talk about that, though, you talk about the fact that the All-Star game still has some value to people around baseball, but at the same time, the organizations don't want to lose their stars, and I do see where that comes into play. It's just, it is disappointing because I remember way back in the day, Greg Maddux and Randy Johnson here in 97, how much fun that was. And
yeah,
it just looks like this year we're not going to get that type of marquee matchup because all these pitchers are not going to play in the game.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's one of the disappointing things that I think that I see. And congratulations, by the way, to the Indians, 4-5 Indians making the team. I still think Carrasco could have been added to that with no problem. His one poor start, not his last one, but well, the one before that.
The one before that, right.
Yeah, probably cost him because his ERA was just hovering right around 3, might have crept under it after his last start. It cost him, but it would have been nice to see him added at least as an injury replacement. Matt, really great stuff. Great talking baseball with you. Thanks for the update on Terry Francona as well. Enjoy the series this weekend, and we'll catch up again real soon.
Thank you, Bob. Have a great weekend.
You too, my man. Matt Lodi, he's out in Cleveland covering the Tigers and the Indians in a three-game set, the final series of the first half before the All-Star break. Again, 5 All-Stars on the Indians, a pair now for the Tigers, if you did not hear it. Justin Upton has been added to the All-Star team as an injury replacement. He's been leading the Tigers in hitting and home runs and RBIs, I believe, all three throughout this first half. All right, getting close to the top of the hour Sports Center. Adam McKee of Toledo is going to the Marathon Classic, and you know what? He wants company. I've got another 4-pack of any day ground passes to the Marathon Classic at Highland Meadows, which is coming up, on July 17th through the 23rd, and I will give that next 4-pack to caller number 8. We'll go one better than the last one. How's that? Caller number 8 to 866-240-1065. We'll send you to the Classic, and we'll be back with our number 2 of this Free-for-All Friday right after this on ESPN 106.5.
Now again the 1-2, and it's right back up the middle into center field, a base hit. Up and rounding third, he'll come home to score, and Miguel Cabrera gets it done with 2 outs. Here's a drive in the air toward left field. That ball going to the track, to the wall, and it is gone! Dixon Machado has homered a 2-run shot.
He might just get the silent treatment in the dugout.
First major league home run for Machado. It'll be Aníbal Sanchez down the hill today for the Tigers. Swing and a miss. He was bailing out there, struck him out. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Sanchez limits the damage with his 8th strikeout.
I thought he was outstanding with his mix of pitches and his command of his pitches. He was real good in San Diego as well. And this is 3 excellent ones in a row. He's been impressive since he decided to go down and reset and become a starter again.
Ramirez shoots one high and deep to right. Renfro is out of room. It's out of here. Jose Ramirez with a 2-out, 2-run homer makes it 3-0 Cleveland. He drives this one to right center field, and it is gone. Nice catch by the fan with a glove right up against the bullpen fence. Home run number 18 for Edwin. Yan Gomes drills this ball to deep center field. Margo back, looking up. He'll wave goodbye.
Probably still got a big part of what's going on here on a daily basis. I bet he's not too happy in the hospital. We keep in contact, but then the guys on the team will text him to talk to him and just kind of keep him in the loop, talk to him. You know, we need him at the helm here, there's no doubt about it. He's a big part of our success. He knows the game and he knows the players really well, and his presence alone has that sense of calm in the dugout, and we obviously want his health to be fine first before he comes back.
Boston, since they got the commitment from Gordon Hayward, they've had to create some salary cap space to sign him to a max deal. In doing that, they were out shopping Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, and Jay Crowder. They closed in here in the last several hours on a deal with the Pistons, which Boston sends out Bradley and a second-round pick for Marcus Morris. For the Celtics, it gives them the ability now to sign Hayward into their salary cap space, and Detroit gets a tremendous two-way player in Avery Bradley, who just, I think, going forward was going to be difficult for the Celtics to pay him his market value, which could be as much as $20 million a year. Stan Van Gundy has been looking for that tough-minded two-way player at the guard position. He can score the ball. He defends. He's an elite defender at his position. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who's a restricted free agent, he could potentially go out and get a max offer sheet from a team like Otto Porter did. Detroit has been very reluctant to pay him that kind of money. And it gives Detroit now the flexibility to maybe not have to keep Caldwell Pope, but now they have an alternative here if they don't go forward with him. You know, Avery Bradley's a player who I think the Pistons are going to be very aggressive in trying to extend long term.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Final hour of the broadcast, final hour of the show, final hour of the day, final hour of the work week on this free-for-all Friday edition of the Extravaganza. Let's make it count. We got, by my count, 49 more minutes. Uh-oh, it's 4:12 now. 48 more minutes of outstanding awesome left for you. Hey, congratulations to Keith Mons. Yes, Keith Mons?
Yep, that's correct.
Keith Mons of Oregon won the marathon passes, so congratulations. He's got the four any-day ground passes for the Marathon Classic. By the way, speaking of the Classic, you know this? ESPN 106.5 The Ticket will have complete coverage of the 2017 LPGA Marathon Classic from Highland Meadows coming up on the 17th through the 23rd. Drive Time with Mike Miller. We'll be live all week from the Classic, 5 to 6 p.m. This program, the Afternoon Extravaganza, will be live Thursday and Friday from 3 to 5 p.m. Mike Jamison and Great Lakes Golf Today will be live Saturday at noon. And Cheap Seats with Mick Gonzalez will be live Sunday morning, as well as Jim Cushlin having live updates from Highland Meadows on both Saturday and Sunday. That, my friends, is what I call complete coverage of the Marathon Classic right here on Toledo's ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. All right. So now that we got that out of the way, what are you thinking about that baseball conversation? I don't necessarily want to tell managers that they have to compromise their team's chances of gaining a game in the standings, for example, by altering their rotation to make sure that their all-star pitchers can go on Tuesday. I don't want to tell them that. They shouldn't be forced. But I also don't want an all-star game in which we're watching the fourth and fifth best pitchers instead of the first or second best pitchers in each league starting the game and getting the first crack at the starting lineups before substitutions are made on each side in the batting orders. I want to see the very best. I want to see who's the best starter in the American League right now, Cush? Well, who would you say is the best pitcher, starting pitcher right now in the American League at this particular point in time?
My home biases want to say Kluber, and the only other possibility I can think of is Chris Sale.
Kluber is clearly pitching the best
over
the last six, seven starts since he came off the DL. As far as the whole first half goes, yeah, I got to probably look at Chris Sale. Maybe Jason Vargas, who's got a 2.62 ERA from Kansas City, just because he's sitting there with that 12-3 sparkling record and a 2.62. Give him all the credit in the world. That record is better than Corey Kluber's, obviously. Chris Sale is 11-4, only one game worse than Vargas with a 2.75, and he's doing it on a first-place team, which makes a bit of a difference, too. I think we would all agree, as far as how well you're performing and how big, if you can call them that in the first half, the games are. You might give Sale the nod because Boston is in first place over the Royals, who are, they're only a game out behind the Indians. So.
Yeah.
What the hell? Give Vargas some credit, too. But you got Vargas, you got Sale in terms of ERA in the American League. You got Vargas, Sale, and Kluber in that order, 2.62, 2.75, 2.85. In terms of wins, it's Vargas, and then it's Sale, and then it's Irvin Santana, then Carlos Carrasco and Dallas Keuchel, which is kind of why I was talking about I think Carrasco had deserved a shot at this, at least as an injury replacement. Out of the National League, the ERA king right now is Max Scherzer, the former Tiger for Washington, has he been worth almost every penny that they paid him, at least so far. But I remember, wasn't it a seven-year deal that extends out to 10, I think, in some capacity or another?
I think so. It's a big contract. I know what the
Nats gave him, but it's crazy money. And he has just been dominant. And Scherzer has a 1.94 ERA to lead the National League, followed by the aforementioned Clayton Kershaw at 2.19. In terms of victories, Kershaw 13, Scherzer 10, Zach Greinke 10, Zach Davies of Milwaukee 10, Alex Wood also of the Dodgers 10. Now, my point to all of that is I don't want to see, Zach Davies going against the very best that the National League has to offer in the first two innings, working their way through the lineup. I want to see Clayton Kershaw against Aaron Judge. I want to see Clayton Kershaw against Jose Ramirez, who's starting for the American League. I want to see, probably Chris Sale against Bryce Harper and Daniel Murphy and Buster Posey and you know, the rest of the National League starters. Before we get into the substitutions and bringing in the reserves, if you will, and not to I'm not trying to diminish them in any way, but you understand the point. The biggest names against the biggest names. So while I don't want to force managers, Cush, to compromise their own team's chances by rearranging the rotation to make sure that that Kluber can pitch in the All-Star game, that Kershaw can pitch in the All-Star game, I don't want to mess up their chances. I would like to at least incentivize them somehow, incentivize them in some way to make them want to, and I don't know if it's financial remuneration for the pitcher, if you play in the game or if you are available for playing in the game and not either taking the time off by way of injury replacement or just saying you're injured so you don't have to play, you still get the honor. But there has to be some way so that baseball can make that All-Star game, particularly since they went ahead and monkeyed around and made it count for the World Series. You just want to make sure that the very best players are at least incentivized to play.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you on that. I mean, it's one thing if a guy's on the DL and therefore needs a replacement. Like, the AL's got three of those. Trout, Starlin Castro of the Yankees, and Keuchel of the Astros are all going to be still on their respective DLs when the game hits. That's one thing,
yes,
you know, to replace those guys.
Yes.
Now, in terms of this rule, and this, remember, this isn't that old of a rule, but it's actually one of the things that did not get changed this offseason because, you know, they changed the All-Star game. It doesn't count anymore. That's why it's also not managers anymore. It's some kind of combo of a player and a commissioner's office vote for all the reserves and pitchers. I got a radical idea for this one because this replacement issue for Kluber v. Fulmer and Yu Darvish and Clayton Kershaw also all slated to go on Sunday. That's why you have all the replacements. And
right,
you can pretty much guarantee now they're going to start. Like, we were debating yesterday and we had, when we were talking to the Tigers that, hey, if you're Brad Ausmus, do you pull Michael Fulmer from his Sunday start so he can pitch in the All-Star game? We now have our answer to that. He will be starting Sunday because they already named the replacements.
Now that one is a little different, Jimmy. Because, you know, by almost every account, the Tigers are done. The Tigers are going to put guys up for sale in the next 2 weeks. Not Chris, that is. They're going to sell off their best players and try to rebuild because they have a massive payroll that is not producing anything and they're not going anywhere. So the Tigers, and your question yesterday to Ashley McLennan from BlessYouBoys.com was a good one. And that was, you know, should Ausmus give, you know, the Detroit fans at least the thrill of seeing their one guy, and now there's two we know, but as of yesterday, their one representative in the All-Star game play. Should Ausmus not start him on Sunday so that can happen and just give them a thrill? It's not going to cost the Tigers potentially a game that could cost them a division championship. Now, if the Indians come within, let's say, a game of winning the division, and they lose it by a division, somebody's going to point back to, you remember when Kluber was supposed to start on the Sunday before the All-Star game, and they would have won that game, and now they wouldn't be a game out in the, you know, in the Central? A game can matter. And so that's why I don't want to force managers to do it if their teams are in contention for, you know, for postseason glory. But in a situation where the Tigers are essentially done, you know, crying out loud, you know, Brad, so Michael doesn't go against Kluber, big deal.
Yeah.
Get him in the All-Star game Tuesday. I'm sure the Tigers fans would love to see that. Now, maybe that changes because Upton has been added, and maybe he'll get an at-bat.
It's not just the Upton added part. I'm seeing four pitchers, Roberto Osuna, Brandon Kinsler, Chris Davinsky, Chris Archer, all named as replacements on the AL squad. That's for Keuchel, Kluber, Darvish, and Fulmer. So, sadly, the question at this moment in time is now moot. The replacement has already been named.
Right. So
I got a radical idea for this.
What's that?
Because the debate is, well, if they start, because it's only starters. I've never heard anything about a reliever. Like, if Andrew Miller goes on Sunday, he's still able to pitch on Tuesday in the All-Star game, from what I understand. This rule's always been about starter. So my radical idea for this is based on something that I've noticed the last couple years. You know, it used to be the All-Star break was Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and for some teams it extended to Thursday. You either started your quote-unquote second half on Thursday or Friday, right? Well, as you've noticed, I'm sure you have too, Bob, in the last couple of years, they've made it more uniform that you don't restart the quote-unquote second half until Friday. So everybody's right. break is Monday through Thursday.
Right, a longer break.
Here's my radical idea. And if it were to work, it kills two birds with one stone because there's another, there's one more bone to pick with the current all-star situation that I'm going to get to with this. Move the game to Wednesday. Take it off of Tuesday. Futures game gets played on Monday. I hate how the futures game, and whether or not you watch it or like it, the point is you can't hardly ever find it. You know why? It's on Sunday afternoon when all the other afternoon first half finales are going on. So nobody ever notices it. Play that on Monday, home run derby Tuesday, the game itself Wednesday, Thursday for any of your all-stars to travel to meet back up with your team. Starting pitchers would then have 2 days off. Or 2 days off. If they started Sunday, they would have Monday, Tuesday off before the Wednesday game.
It is very radical. You said you have a radical idea. It is very radical.
I did say it was radical, yes.
No question about
Tuesday
that.
How many decades,
for how many decades now has baseball played the All-Star game on Tuesday?
Since they started the All-Star game in 1933. It's always been a Tuesday.
So that's eight of them. Eight decades. 80-plus years since they've been doing the All-Star game, and you want to bump it over to Wednesday now. Not gonna work.
No, it won't. That's why it's a radical idea.
It is radical.
If it wasn't radical, somebody else would try to actually do it.
All radical ideas, by the very nature of radicalism, are very hard to get done. You're exactly right about that. But you know what, Jim? I don't know that it would really change anything anyway, because if you pitched on Sunday, for example, you're still not available on Wednesday, right?
A normal starter, but as we know, in modern All-Star games, your starters go one inning.
One or two innings, I know.
Maybe two if you're the starter.
Understood, but what I mean by that is if you pitch on Sunday, you really would only have 2 days rest before even pitching an inning at full speed. And you know the way they treat arms these days.
Yeah.
You know, the day after you start, you pretty much do nothing. The day after that, and I don't know the exact routine because everybody has a little bit of a different one, but that's when they'll get out there and throw some long toss and start to build it back up, and then they'll do a little bit of bullpen work on the third day, and then they, you know, they ramp it up to the fifth day till their next start. It's a very methodical process of building. And they only mess with that, of course, in the postseason or in the pennant race in late September when you're trying to make the postseason and somebody will go on 3 days rest.
Sure.
I can't even imagine in a billion years any manager saying, my guy's going to go for his full six, seven, eight, nine innings on Sunday, and then we're going to somehow mess with his arm recovery routine on Monday and Tuesday so that he can go an inning on Wednesday in some cockamamie All-Star game. Not going to happen.
No, and you're right. It won't. And I like my particular idea in it because, like I said, it kills two birds with one stone. Major League Baseball, I feel, continues to make a mistake by playing, because that'll be played in Miami at the same ballpark, but it'll be Sunday afternoon tucked away while you're watching your first half finales. I can't stand that. You know, it needs to be treated the same way as the whatever they call the game that used to be the rookie sophomore game in the NBA during their All-Star weekend. The NBA, the baseball futures game is the equivalent of that, but it's not during the break itself.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to hold it Wednesday because Wednesday's the day everybody travels back to their teams as it's currently set up.
Sure.
But yeah, no, it's radical. They won't do it. But that's part of my suggestion. And again, remember, it, part of that's based on nobody plays on Thursday more. It used to be you would start the second half on Thursday, maybe a Friday, depending on your schedule. Now everybody starts Friday, so everybody's break is 4 days, where when I was born, it was three.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's how it has been. So, I mean, and I don't want to overthink this and make this that big of a deal personally. I just, like I said, it's the kid in me who – you know, remembers, as I said, I picked Ron Guidry. I could have said J.R. Richard of the Astros, who was just such a beast. and seeing his big 6'8" menacing scowl on the hill, staring in at, I don't know, Don Mattingly of the American League or whomever, just seeing Dave Winfield with the Yankees. And it was such a treat to see. Could Tom Seaver of the Reds in 1981, strike out, Reggie Jackson
he would have been the Yankees by then,
or whatever the case might be. You know, it was just such a treat to see the, I mean, Jimmy, there was no ESPN, and so this is a part of what makes me sound like old disgruntled guy. But there was no ESPN, so there were no highlights. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if we had George Michael's sports machine back then, for crying out loud. You know what I'm saying? It was a treat.
And, of course, you had no interleague.
There was no interleague
in
play,
either,
so you wouldn't see them again. The only time I could have seen Guidry pitching to Steve Garvey was either in the World Series, Yankees and Dodgers, 1977, or in the All-Star game.
Yep.
And I want to see that. I want to see if one of those guys could strike out Pete Rose, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, it's just the kid that still lives inside of me that wants to see the very best go against the very best, even if it's only for a couple of innings. And then, of course, it's, hey, you know, the very best relievers against, the next wave of great hitters and so on. And I don't know. It just doesn't seem to have the same feel when you have all these guys pitching all over the weekend. And you named, four pitchers were named?
Because the AL between starting pitchers and DL guys needed six replacements that were all named today, and the NL replacement is Kershaw, Alex Wood, his teammates going in.
Which makes sense, by the way, because he might be better than Kershaw, at least this year anyway, just, you know, in terms of his first half statistics.
Right.
This kid, Wood, that nobody knows and nobody is even paying attention to, is just flat out awesome, the start that he has had for the Dodgers. And what an incredible 1-2 punch. That's why when our guest yesterday, when we talked to Ashley McLennan from BlessYouBoys.com, the Tigers site, mentioned, boy, wouldn't Verlander look good right behind Kershaw in the rotation? And I'm thinking to myself, what are you talking about? Because there's already a guy behind Kershaw in the Dodgers rotation. His name is Alex Wood, and he is a beast.
Hey, even better. That means if you're the Dodgers, that Justin Verlander's your game three first game on the road starter. Just saying.
Yeah, there you go. That's exactly right. So, I mean, for me, and I love stories like this too, so I have no problem whatsoever with Alex Wood, of course, going in to replace Kershaw in that lineup. Alex Wood, if you're scoring at home, this young 26-year-old for the Dodgers is 10-0 with an ERA of 1.67. It's actually better than Max Scherzer's, who is leading the American League, as I pointed out. But I think it's an innings thing. No, is it? Hold on a second. Alex Wood has started 13 games. Why was he not at the top of the?
It's an innings thing.
It's not a starts thing. It's an innings
stint earlier in the year, so he's just under that line of qualifiers for a stat like that or batting average.
Okay, because I was going to say he's made 13 starts.
Yep. No, yeah, I saw that too. He's just under the innings level that you need to be in to be qualified to be in that race.
Wow, that's so strange. Because
if he doesn't get hurt anymore at all this year, no more DL stints, he'll probably hit it at some point in the second half.
Of course. But I was going to say, because Kluber has also made only 13 starts, and he's third in the American League ERA race with 2.85. He has pitched 88 innings. So let me go back to Alex Wood, who has where is it here? Now I can't seem to find Alex Wood's line again. Apologies. But Alex Wood was 1.67 in 15 appearances and 13 starts, and I'm looking for his innings pitched line again. Do you have his innings pitched there, Jimmy?
He's at 80.2, so he's 8 innings less than Kluber, that line must be right between where Alex Wood is and Corey Kluber's. Must be about 84 innings or something now.
Yeah, that must be it. That must be the cutoff.
It changes basically every day.
Anyway, but regardless of the number of innings, he's 13 starts, 10-0, 1.67, I believe I said. He is on the National League All-Star team now, so which is certainly well-deserved. Okay. Here's what I got. I'm going to get a timeout here in the bottom of the Air Sports Center. We're going to shift gears and get into a couple of other things on this Free-for-All Friday, including a huge battle, very interesting conversation amongst many of the hosts and guests on Mike and Mike in the Morning, all relative to a comment made by D'Angelo Williams, who was doing an interview on the podcast that Adam Schefter has, and You Don't Know From Adam, I think it's called, online. And D'Angelo Williams is complaining about the way the league treats its potheads. He doesn't like that the league's multi-time drug violators, the big-time suspended guys like Josh Gordon and others, and Martavis Bryant of the Steelers, that these guys don't get to be around their homies, their buddies, their pals, their BFFs, during their suspended times, saying that this is bad for the players and bad for the league, and the league should really look out for them. Really interesting comments. They're getting all kinds of reaction about drug testing in the NFL and about where, when, whether or not marijuana should be tested for in the NFL and how the NFL treats these players. I'll tell you what we'll do is we'll come back after the Sports Center. I'm going to play D'Angelo Williams' comments. I'm going to play a little bit about, of the Mike and Mike guys' response to them, and then I'm going to give you mine. And I'm going to ask Kush for his, and I'll ask you for yours at 866-240-1065 when we come right back here on The Ticket.
866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Back indeed. 22 minutes of outstanding awesome left for you on this Friday afternoon edition of the extravaganza, and you will have more awesome from Mike Miller and Drive Time coming up at 5 o'clock. Okay, as I mentioned before the bottom of the hour Sports Center there, yesterday, or actually was on, I want to say Wednesday, that D'Angelo Williams made the comments on the podcast hosted by Adam Schefter, of course, NFL Insider for ESPN. And it was on this podcast that D'Angelo Williams went on a bit of a rant about the way he believes the NFL mistreats its players who are in the substance abuse program, particularly those who have been suspended and banned from any contact with their teams. I'll let his own words speak for themselves, and then we'll have a couple of reactions to it, including my own. Here is D'Angelo Williams, NFL free agent running back, most recently, of course, with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Had a very nice run with them as the backup to Le'Veon Bell, but he's a free agent now. And here's what he said.
The rules are so outdated. This is the issue that I have with the NFL. We preach family, 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 family. And as soon as something happens, we're individual. We are individual. And this is the cherry on top that really bothers the hell out of me. And fans should really understand this. This is what drives me. So if a guy get busted for pot or street drugs or something like that, they suspend him for 4 games, he can't come around the guys that's going to keep him from the pot. They put them in, they're going to put them right back in there with the guys that he got busted with. They isolate him from the positive vibes and influence that he's going to have in the locker room. That's going to keep him off of the stuff. They're going to put him back in the vicinity, in the area, in the place where he got busted at. So the guys that you're trying to keep him away from, you push him back to them because that's who he's going to fall back on.
60 minutes of insanity, I believe, from D'Angelo Williams, who, by the way, is a very, very good dude. I like him. I've always liked him as a player. I've always liked him when he was with the Panthers and the Steelers. I've always liked him as a player and as a man. He's a very intelligent guy. But he's peddling a load of crap when it comes to this. And I feel like he needs a response as a load of crap. I'm going to let Mike Golic respond in a second or two here from what he did on Mike and Mike yesterday, but I want to get to a specific part of this in the middle of his commentary, in which he claims that the NFL, by not allowing players who have been suspended from the team, who are not allowed to be with their players, by not allowing that, it pushes them back into the guys that they got busted doing the stuff with in the first place.
This is what drives me. So if a guy get busted for pot or street drugs or something like that, they suspend them for 4 games. He can't come around the guys that's going to keep him from the pot. They put him in, they're going to put him right back in there with the guys that he got busted with.
How do you know, D'Angelo? How do you know that the guys he does pot with aren't the guys in the damn locker room? Do you know how much weed flows through NBA and NFL locker rooms? I don't know about baseball as much, but talking to the athletes that I've talked to through my 20 years in radio, and I've talked to Hall of Famers and rookies, and I'm telling you, I could give you some stories about how much drugs and alcohol, well, alcohol not really in the locker room, obviously, but how many of these guys are big-time heavy drinkers after games and practices. But I could tell you, particularly because alcohol or because drugs are illegal, I'm telling you, the notion that keeping them away from the players pushes them back into the guys they did drugs with is the biggest load of garbage you're ever going to hear. Because so many of the guys that get busted were doing the drugs with other teammates. It's just that on random drug testing, sometimes it's Russian roulette. In all seriousness, it's Russian roulette. It's, you know, guys will get together, they'll party, they'll smoke, they'll roll it, they'll twist it, they'll light it, they'll inhale it, and then maybe they'll have to pee about it a day or two later or within 30 days. And the same two guys who could have been doing it, one of them has to fill the cup, one of them doesn't. Uh-oh, roll of the dice, spin the revolver, and hope you don't get one in the chamber. Because that's what it is. It's Russian roulette sometimes. So that's the big part of this for me, is the idea that the NFL somehow is hurting the players by keeping them away from the guys who would keep them away from drugs is just ludicrous because of the amount of weed that flows through the average NFL roster, through the average NFL locker room, if you will. All right. Now I want to play for you the reaction yesterday that kind of led to a really, really great confrontation slash conversation on Mike and Mike yesterday, and then a follow-up today as Mike Golic lays it out, I think, as well as anybody can. Stop blaming other people, D'Angelo. Take some personal freaking responsibility. How about some accountability? Stop blaming the league when this is all about the players' choices. Mr. Golic, please take it away.
But what I'm getting a little tired of, I'm not going to lie, is the lack of accepting responsibility for what you're doing.
Preach.
You could sit there and say the rules are outdated. Listen, do I think at the end of the day marijuana is, and this is basically what we're talking about, let's be honest. From the recreational drug side, players like to smoke.
Bingo.
They do. Now, if we're finding out that the oils are good for pain and that all works out to where we can use that instead of opioids, I am absolutely, positively all for that. Do you realize for recreational drugs, you have to have multiple offenses before you're suspended, which means offense, you're still in that locker room. You're still around all the guys who are supposed to be the ones saving you, yet you're testing positive over and over while you're in that environment.
They're the guys sparking up with them, for crying out loud. Trust me on this. Trust Golic on this.
Rarely are guys smoking alone on a team. Players smoke. That's the reality of this. Look in the mirror. That's where this needs to start. How about D'Angelo saying, you know what, players? You shouldn't be doing this. I don't agree with the rule, but it's the rule right now. Don't smoke. It is illegal.
Thank you. And that is exactly, and by the way, I disagree with Golic in that regard. I do agree with the rule. I am so tired of the overly permissive attitude that is pervading so much of our society right now. With respect to marijuana, it's very, very dangerous. People don't realize how dangerous it is. And so many different levels, and even if you disagree with it, as Golic said, D'Angelo, instead of, boy, the NFL really isn't being nice to our guys, they tell us it's about family until something happens, and then it's you're an individual, you don't get to be around your family. That's just a low, I'm sorry. As I said before, D'Angelo Williams to me, and I don't have his IQ, all I go, it's the eye test and the ear test, just a very smart dude. I don't know, I was about to say he might be one of the smartest guys in the NFL. I don't know if I can do that. Because I don't know who the smartest guys in the NFL are, but I promise you he's one of them. Major, major props and deep respect for D'Angelo Williams. Very deeply intelligent guy and very well thought out in his arguments. But he's trying to peddle a load of crap here to Adam Schefter in this podcast.
The rules are so outdated. This is the issue that I have with the NFL. We preach family, 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 family. And as soon as something happened...
Stop. Stop. You don't get to do that. D? You don't get to do that. As soon as something happens... As soon as something happens...
And as soon as something happened, we're individual.
We're individuals. No! Not as soon as something happens. It's more like, eventually, after something happens once... And then it happens again. And then after it happens again. And then after it happens again. Then, okay, you got to go be an individual. You can't be around your team. You are not allowed to be a part. You're suspended from your team. And oh, by the way, it's the same thing that Tom Brady got for the ridiculous deflate story. 4-game suspension, couldn't be at the facility, couldn't even invite, if he wanted to, Julian Edelman to his house to throw the ball to him in his yard. Not allowed to be around the team. That's the way suspensions work. And when it comes to suspensions for weed, it isn't as soon as something happens, we're individuals.
And as soon as something happens, we're individuals.
No, no. You got to mess up many, many, many times for that to be the case. Golic ran down. And
I'm so glad you
got it because
I
looked for it myself. Jimmy, the actual letter of the law when it comes to the NFL's drug policy. But he looked it up and he read it and came to find out that you have to be busted 6 different times, 6 different positive tests, 6, before you are suspended for a full year, the way Josh Gordon was, the way Martavis Bryant of the Steelers was last year, and other guys have been
as
well.
And that's just where I was going to go, that I'm glad Golic kind of pointed that out. I had forgotten some of the details, but being Browns guys that we are, we're fully fluent thanks to one Josh Gordon,
that's right.
We know it requires a bunch of times before the big suspensions kick in.
And that's when you can't be around the players.
Right.
You can't be around the facility, and that's when he's like, well, who do you think's going to keep him out of trouble? Who the hell do you think he got in trouble with? He was burning with his boys. And they're not his homeboys from, back in his old neighborhood. It's with the guys that he runs with now, the multimillionaire jet setters that they are. That's who smokes. As I'm just so glad to hear a former player, not some talk show host like me, say what needed to be said. And that was, of course, Golic. And that is, this is not about keeping the guy away from the people who are going to help him. His NFL teammates are not the Betty Ford Clinic. This is not the place to go to learn how to dry out. This is not the place to go to learn how to, break the habit and break your addiction. The NFL locker room, sad to say, and the practice facility and their apartments and their hotel rooms and so on and so forth is the place to go to get lit. That's what it is. It's the place to go to hit it many times, because there's a plenty of guys who are doing it. As Golic said, so this is, again, what's important to me, is that it's a former player saying guys like to smoke. This isn't about, by the way, they tried to do that today, by the way. Mike Golic Jr. was in this morning. Jimmy, I don't know if you were able to hear it this morning as you came in and got ready for our show, but Mike Golic Jr. was on the show with Mike and Greenberg. And, he tried to get into the opioid story, as in NFL players go through their careers, obviously, in a lot of pain, and they're always looking for ways to deal with that pain. And because opioids are such, the dirty word now in American culture, and with good reason, we all know the story, heavy opioid prescriptions by a lot of doctors, irresponsible doctors, which are then cut off. These opioids, including things like painkillers like Percocet, Darvocet, OxyContin, Oxycodone, all these different things. That these are the things that once they're cut off, the body still craves it so badly that people will go out and get it wherever they can, and they get it in the form of heroin, which is a lot cheaper. And that's leading to a lot of deaths. So the protective player story here is that, well, the players who are in so much pain, rather than give them opioids, let them have marijuana for their pain to help manage their pain, because it's not nearly as damaging and as addictive to hard things as the opioids are. And that's how Mike Jr. tried to roll that. No pun intended. that's how he tried to roll with that, let's put it that way, today. But it was Mike Sr. who laid it out and saying, you know what, that's okay. If you want to have that conversation, what should the NFL allow for pain management? If marijuana, whether it be through the marijuana oils or creams rubbed into muscles, has the impact, or whether it's in smokeless forms, that sort of thing, or even if it is smoking forms, if eventually they decide from a pain management standpoint, this is allowed when prescribed, okay, we'll talk. But as Golic pointed out, this isn't about pain management. This isn't about, I've got ankles, knees, necks, elbow problems, muscle problems. I need some pain tolerance medicine. This is about dudes just liking to burn lettuce. That's it. They like to get high, not for pain management, but for recreational enjoyment. And that's it. And I'm not going to sit here and listen to D'Angelo say the teams need to do more for these players who are just trying to manage their pain. No, bull crap. They like to get high because many of them have been getting high since college and many of them since even before that. And now that they got millions and millions of dollars as NFL players, man, it's easier to get high than ever before now, with the exception of the fact that it's against the law and it's against the NFL rules. Golic set it straight. Where are you, Golic?
Why? Is the lack of accepting responsibility for what you're doing. You could sit there and say the rules are outdated. Listen, do I think at the end of the day marijuana is, and this is basically what we're talking about, let's be honest, from the recreational drug side, players like to smoke. They do. Now, if we're finding out that the oils are good and that all works out to where we can use that instead of opioids, I am absolutely positively all for that. Do you realize for recreational drugs, you have to have multiple offenses before you're suspended, which means offense, you're still in that locker room. You're still around all the guys who are supposed to be the ones saving you. You're testing positive over and over while you're in that environment.
Exactly.
Rarely are guys smoking alone on a team.
Exactly.
Players smoke. That's the reality of this.
Bingo.
Look in the mirror. That's where this needs to start. How about D'Angelo saying, you know what, players? You shouldn't be doing this. I don't agree with the rule, but it's the rule right now.
How about that? How about exactly that? Instead of going on the podcast with Adam Schefter and saying, you know, the league sells us out. They're all family. We're together. But then when we screw up, we're individuals. How about instead of complaining about the league, how about, hey, players, stop ruining your careers. Don't be stupid. Put down the blunt. Put down the bong.
There's
plenty of time
for
you to spark up after your career is over, but quit doing it now and hurting yourself and making the rest of us look bad too. How about that message? I very rarely have I been with another host like Golic in this case as much as I am on this one, because I have been preaching the same thing for many, many years. Stop with the victim mentality when it comes to these guys. Jim, you and I watched it for the last several years.
Yep.
with Gordon.
With Gordon.
Obviously. You know, as fans of the Browns. And I've always been so tired of he's a victim, you know, he's addicted, it's a disease, it's not his fault, blah, blah, blah. And the league should do something, change it. My God, why are they testing anyway? This man led the NFL in receiving yardage 4 years ago. They shouldn't be how about stop telling the league not to test for it and go tell that dude, stop breaking the rules.
Exactly. I lost any sympathy for the Gordon situation after about the second of the big screw-ups, and he's on, what, number five or something right now, or
I
six?
I don't know what it is, but
he's
done.
We lost count, it feels like, so many, but I lost any sympathy I could have had for him after about number two, because it's like, all right, dude, this is on you now for keep screwing up.
God
bless. Even if I wanted to give you empathy before, now it's on you.
Yep. God bless that man with 6'4", 212 pounds of sheer athletic talent. And he has the potential to make tens and tens and tens of millions and millions of dollars. And he blew it all, literally, by blowing smoke. He made the decision himself to give up what the rest of us would give our left arm for. And I have no pity for that. And you can't put down the bong long enough to sign your next check for next contract, for crying out loud. You know what, man? I got no sympathy for you. Matthew in Toledo. Matthew, I apologize. We're ranting and rolling so long here. I'm not going to have much time for you, but go ahead and make your point before we're done.
Well, real quick, one of the things that so many of these people in our society that are promoting the use of marijuana seem to not be aware of and are overlooking is that so much of the current marijuana that's being manufactured and distributed and sold is being laced with other more potent and more addictive drugs such as cocaine and fentanyl, which are illegal regardless of what state you're in. And one of the things that's going to happen is these players are all going to start testing positive for all these other drugs and then not be able to play because they were simply, in their words, smoking pot.
That's very well said, my friend. I'm glad I got you in before the end of the show, Matthew. Thank you, my good man. Good stuff. That's a great message to end the show with and to head out into the weekend with, because that's exactly right. Sometimes things aren't what they seem to be, and they may be a lot more dangerous than people realize. All right, that's it. That's all the time that we do have. Thanks for being a part of the show today. Thanks again to Matt Lodi for talking baseball with us. Hopefully you had a good time. We certainly did. Enjoy your weekend, and then join us again on Monday for the next edition of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.